Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Welcome to another episode of Into the Fray. A couple of things before I get to my latest interview. Brand new patrons over at patreon.com. Hello to Barry Norton, Karen Spinetti-Lieber, Martin Deacon, Elizabeth Lovett, Katrina Espinoza, John Emberly, Nick Walker, Pam, Nathan Strayed, Bambi, Sarah Feltz, Anthony Todd Hatcher, Tracy McNulty, Bethany Wallace, Ward Johnson, and Patrick Ray. And also, Alpha Shoutouts. These are people pledging $20 or more per month over at patreon.com to help support Into the Fray, the show that they obviously love, which is spectacular to me. And thank you guys, all of my patrons, so very much. Alphas are Anthony Mikulski, Azriel, Chad Irving, Andrew of Black Triangle Coffee, Eric Garcia, Crystal Bowman, Isis Fernandez, Karina, John, Nightwing, Randy, Salcedo Paranormal, Roy Daniel, Ted Cheever, Steve Alarcon, Josh Arthur, Chad Ralston, Jack Cavender, Richard Rose, Sean Kevin Jason, Tyler DeMoney, Stephen Bashore, Charles Mann, Sticky Sound Zine, Matthew Lacewell, Eric Ribich, Maynard W., Nick Walker, and Patrick Ray. Thank you guys all so much for your support and, of course, the interaction with the live chats, the Discord room, all of the benefits that come along with Patreon. You can check out the 5 different pledge levels by going to patreon.com and searching Into the Fray. And one more thing. It is a new year and you may have some resolutions to execute. Maybe another one should be trying out a podcast that you haven't heard before. How about trying out an interview-based podcast like mine? Jim Harold's Campfire is hosted by, well, Jim, who has been podcasting since 2005. The Campfire finds Jim speaking with those who have experienced the unique, the strange, and sometimes the darn scary, without the addition of sound effects. They're simply not needed. Recent episodes include Stalked by a Monster and The Ghost That Saved Me. For 90 minutes every week, Jim talks to regular folks about UFOs, cryptids, hauntings, and head scratchers. You can tune in to Jim Harold's Campfire on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to Into the Fray. So on this edition of Into the Fray, I have on with me Nicole Maroc, and she is both an author and a podcaster, and also happens to have a BS in meteorology, which I was reading about on your site. That is awesome. And she is the podcast host and producer of the PEEP podcast, and PEEP stands for People Experiencing Everyday Paranormal. And Nicole, I was checking out, of course, PEEP. I have heard a couple of episodes. There's one in particular maybe we could get into later, and that is about the EVP, interactive EVP episode that you had, which is very cool. But you're 31 episodes in so far, and you've covered more science-based experiments, and there's NDEs. You've got lucid dreaming folks that you've had on there that you've chatted with them about. And I know we're going to be talking about some of your personal experiences and the fact that you've been investigating for, it looks like, over a decade now. But I think probably the first question most people get asked is, of course, what came first, the scary personal experience chicken or the investigative egg? You know, which one was it for you that came first? And welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here. And at first, I was a big fat chicken, so the chicken came first.
No, not that you're a chicken. Did somebody kind of start reading books and then they started investigating, and then they had, you know, then they had the shadow person experience, and or is it the other way around? That's all I meant. I wasn't calling you a chicken at all.
Yeah. No,
I'm a chicken in many ways, shape, or form. Don't even worry about that.
I appreciate that. I don't think you're a chicken. You go out and do some pretty cool stuff yourself. But yeah, I started out as truly a scaredy cat. Like, I was an oversensitive kid. Did not know it at the time, of course, because I did not have a family that really talked about this stuff when I was a child. But I'm an empath and intuitive, and I pick up on things very easily. And I was constantly being told that it was my imagination. And I don't suggest that when a child tells you that something scary is happening in your house, give them a listen, please, because I love my parents. We have a great relationship, but I think they were trying to keep me from being as scared as I was by telling me things that were happening were my imagination. And there were a lot of experiences off and on in different places that we lived. We moved around a lot when I was a kid. But when we moved up here to North Carolina, where I live now, I was about 16 and in high school, about to start my junior year. And we moved here in the summertime. And we moved into this house in North Raleigh. It was a nice neighborhood, you know, nothing, I'd say it was unassuming, really. Everybody around here knows this neighborhood. I'm not going to give the name because I don't want people, you know, slowly driving around the neighborhood looking for the house. But it was just a quiet neighborhood. And the minute that we got to the house, Mom started giving everybody boxes to carry in. And I have my hands full and I walk across the threshold and I literally stopped cold and backed out. And I told my mom, I can't live here. And, you know, of course, she's like, what are you talking about? We just signed the lease. You know, we're going to be here for at least a year. Stop being dramatic. And I'm like, there's something in this house. I can't live here. And of course, you know, it was a carry the box inside and do what you need to do. We're moving in today. So that house was the scariest place I've ever been in my life. Even after 10 years of investigating, I'm still going to call that house the scariest place I've ever been in my life.
Wow. So right at the threshold, you're going, nope, not going to happen, Mom. And then unfortunately, Mom's like, oh, it's happening. You're going in there.
Yeah. And I don't blame her. I mean, we did just sign a lease and there was no place else to go.
She's so, like, oh, yeah, you can sleep on the porch, Nicole. No problem.
Right. Yeah.
What are you supposed to do?
Even the porch was scary.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Okay. So you get there and because... I'm not empathic, not to the level that I speak to a lot of you guys. And I think that it sounds like it can be a gift and a curse. So you walk in the house, and I'm just, and I know we'll probably, the story is going to progress here, but I'm just curious, since it was such a strong reaction when you first got there. You got the boxes, she says, go in, and you go in, and I'm assuming the plot is you probably go pick a room maybe, or do a little tour, because now you have to be in there. So do you remember some of the more of the feelings, or did you see anything, or, you know, walk me through a little bit more of that very first meeting with the house?
Well, about all I remember, other than that initial reaction in the doorway, was just a kind of toughening up, like, okay, fine, we're going to have to be here. Let me go in and look inside. Maybe it's not as bad as I think it is. So the way the door through the carport was, is it puts you right into the kitchen. So in the boxes that she handed me were for the kitchen. So I put the boxes down, and I just kind of stand there for a moment, and I'll look around, and I don't see any reason the place should be scary. It just looked like a normal house. So I just tried to tell myself, okay, no big deal. Maybe it is my imagination. Maybe I am just being melodramatic, even though, like, in my heart, I knew I wasn't. Just trying to, you know, talk myself out of it. So it was a split level house. So you have the living room. The main, like the formal living room, the kitchen and the dining area on the main level that you walk into from the outside. And then you go upstairs, and there were three bedrooms. One was the master suite and a bathroom in the hallway. And then you go downstairs, and there's another smaller bedroom and a laundry room and a den. So I looked around. I absolutely did not want to be anywhere close to downstairs. And thankfully, my mom said, we're putting your baby brother down there because he's a drummer. And, you know, the ground will kind of tamp in down some of the drum sounds. Right. So the neighbors won't hate us.
Right.
So they put me and my other brother upstairs with them. And, you know, I was like, this is cool. This is the part of the house that's the least scary feeling. So I felt like I was going to be okay up there. So I calmed down.
Well, thank goodness your brother was interested in drumming, huh? That worked out very well for you.
Definitely.
So how long, did you ever get comfortable in that house? What were some of the other goings on? And this may be too early to ask, but did any of your siblings have any happenings in that home that you know of?
Eventually, everybody in the family did, but for the first several months, everything was focused on me. And I think it's because I was the sensitive, so I was the one that, you know, it was easy to get my attention. The first night, nothing really happened. The second night was the first really, I don't use the word terrifying very often, especially now, but I think that would have been, it would fall under terrifying. So it was taking us with, you know, three teenagers and two adults to get everything together. We worked on my brother's room first. So the first full day, we got their rooms and bathrooms set up. So my room that second night there was still boxes. I was sleeping on a mattress on the floor, surrounded by boxes. There was absolutely nothing unpacked except the clothes that I was sleeping in. And the mattress is in the middle of the floor because we hadn't decided where we were going to put everything. So I thought it was late, late night, early morning. I had been pretty solidly asleep. And I woke to something literally yanking the hair on the crown of my head. I mean, like painful yanking, like you would think a person was pulling your hair. And so I opened my eyes, and I was laying on my back, and I saw this thing above me that the only way I can describe how it looked was like a shimmering silver Mylar balloon in the dark. And it was probably, it felt like it was 3 or 4 feet above me, but it was getting closer. And of course, there are no balloons in my room. Like, we're moving in, everything's in boxes, we have not had a party. So I was terrified, and I threw the covers over my head, And I am Catholic, so my first response was basically saying Hail Marys, that prayer, until I fell back to sleep. And I probably said about 100 of them before I relaxed enough to fall back to sleep. And I ran downstairs when I woke up the next morning, and I told my parents what had happened, and they just told me I dreamed it. Like, it was my imagination. And I knew I was fully awake because that yank on my head had me completely awake when I opened my eyes.
Yeah, I would imagine that was probably a little bit more frustrating than even just that initial, I'm not going in the home. Now you have something not only touching you, but hurting you and physically interacting. And they're still like, nope, it was a dream. Sorry. It's you're imagining that.
Yeah, it was very frustrating. And I probably cried a little bit that day because I didn't know what to do and they weren't listening. So then it was quiet for a few days. I guess it was probably about a week later, and I was taking a bath. Everybody was down in the den. That's where we had the TV. And this was 1990, so it was a big TV, like a big boxy thing.
Right.
And the comfy couch, all that stuff was down in the den. And they were watching, I don't know, something on prime time. And I was trying to relax. So I went upstairs and I took a hot bath, and where the tub was, I could see the door and the light switch from the tub. And I saw a man's hand, like the door opened a crack, a man's hand reached in and turned the light off. And I screamed. And just a second later, the light was back on and the door was shut. And so I got out of the tub, dried off as quickly as I could, and I went downstairs and I yelled at my dad. And he was completely like, I don't know what you're talking about. My mom's like, you've been here the whole time. And I was just, I was freaked out. I was just having a fit. And my mom said, well, maybe one of your brothers snuck up there. And I was like, no, it's a man. It was a man's hand. My brothers are 12 and 13.
Right.
Their hands are not that size. And the more I thought about it, the more I didn't actually see details of the hand. I actually saw the shape of a hand, more like a shadow, but it reached in and turned off the light. I saw the motion. So at that point, they had heard me scream, so they knew I was reacting to something. So they didn't try to tell me that one was my imagination, but they also didn't, you know, there wasn't an explanation, so they just kind of brushed it off.
That one is really scary. I think I would have also been beside myself. I mean, you're in no more a vulnerable position for the most part than being in a bathtub.
Right. Except there was a time in that same bathroom within that same week where I was in a more vulnerable position.
I spoke too soon.
You did. this one is fun too. Now I can laugh. Back then I was not laughing. So the wall, so the toilet is facing the tub, and there is a wall next to the toilet, and the landlord had installed a little wall heater, like a wall unit heater on the wall. And it was August, right? We'd only been there like a week, and we moved in August. And so it's hot. It's North Carolina. It's probably like 95 degrees outside. There's no reason for this heater to be on. And I was doing my business, and I felt my leg get really, really hot, my right leg next to the wall. And I looked down, and the knob to the heater that turns it on and controls the temperature was literally turning to the right. I watched it turn. And I waited until it stopped turning, and then I reached down and turned it off, finished what I was doing, ran downstairs and told mom what happened. And she was like, oh, maybe one of your brothers was playing with it and they left it on before you went in there. And I'm like, no, it was turning. Like, truly. But I watched it turn. And again, I just kind of got brushed off because I don't think anybody else in the house wanted to deal with the fact that there was potentially something that was scary going on. like they didn't know how to deal with it. They didn't, and it wasn't happening to them yet. So it was really easy to just be like, oh, it's just Mickey, whatever.
Right. So at this point, they're all being spared from this, and it's really, really turned its attention to you. I mean, the last two stories you just told would definitely be on my no list. I think that for the most part, you don't get people that can like see a knob turning or actually see a hand turn off a light. Like, to me already, I'm like, these are huge red flags. And whatever this entity was, sure seemed to have a lot of energy and power.
Yeah. And it was, you know, my initial entry into the house was that it was angry. So whatever it was, it knew that it had my attention and it was getting off on scaring me. And it was doing a good job of it.
It's tough though, because I mean, sure, looking back, hindsight's always 20/20, and you can laugh about it now, but even if you had an inkling back then that I shouldn't feed into this, I can't be scared, how in the heck could you not be in just those two situations alone? The bathtub thing, forget it. And then you're sitting this close after already having your hair pulled in bed and all of that, you're sitting this close and watching that knob turn. You're like, no, Mom, wasn't my brothers, believe me, because I watched the knob turn.
Right. They were not in the bathroom with me. This really happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, even, you know, now I am at a point where I've counseled people on what to do to take back control of their house. And I've helped clear a few locations and I've done some really cool stuff. So I probably could handle it now. But as a 16-year-old who'd never even, like, I had read books about mysteries, like I loved ancient mysteries and unexplained mysteries, but I had never read books about ghosts. So I had absolutely no clue how to handle what was going on.
The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. Support your healthy CoQ10 levels and blood pressure with 2 chews a day. Visit RadioBeats, BEETS.com, and save 15% with promo code DEAL.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And Nicole, did you say you were in junior high school or it was your junior year in high school?
It was my junior year in high school.
Okay.
So I was a junior in high school and my brothers were actually in junior high school. They're 2 and 3 years younger than me. And so there's another thing about that house. They would have to catch the bus because of the way the buses run here. They had to catch the bus before me. And then they wouldn't get home until about 45 minutes after me. So I would be alone in the house in the morning for about 20 minutes before I had to go out to catch my own bus. And then I would get home and be alone in the house for about 45 minutes because my parents both worked. And in the mornings, I would just kind of stay near the door and try to keep myself distracted. Or leave as soon as I saw the bus pick them up so they couldn't, like, make fun of me for being afraid of being in the house.
Right.
You know, and go out and sit at the bus stop for longer than I needed to. In the afternoons, I would, like, get home, literally open the door just enough to throw my book bag in, and then walk to the park down the street as long as the weather was good.
Oh.
And sit at the park until I knew somebody was coming home.
That's terrible. Because
I did not want to be alone in that house. So there was this one morning where I was finishing my breakfast when my brothers left. And we had this old table that I think my great grandmother had given my parents when they got married. And it was one of those tables that's like long enough to easily fit 6 people around. And it had a couple of removable leaves in the center of it so you could extend it. And the leaves were in there, but because the table was so old and had been through so many moves, there were gaps between the leaves that were like a good couple of centimeters apart. So it wasn't like a tight fit. And I was sitting there with my juice glass. And, you know, when you get condensation on a glass of cold beverage, like the glass could move when the condensation kind of forms around the bottom of it. So I tried to tell myself that's what was going on, but it actually moved across two of those gaps. And that didn't make any sense. And I watched it. And I did not finish my cereal that morning. I just, like, I think I left the bowl on the table. I just picked up my book bag and went outside. I was done. I'm trying to think of all the other little weird things that happened there. There were so many. It was an entire year of just insanity.
So it sounds like obviously it was focused on you. What about these other experiences that you say the other family members eventually did have?
So for my dad, it started with seeing, he said it was just a shadow moving out of the corner of his eye, but it was like the height of a man. So it was, it started happening probably about 4 or 5 months after we'd been there. And he kind of said it quietly between me, him, and my mom, because I think he was trying not to startle the boys by having somebody else witness stuff. And when I asked him, you know, what did the man look like? He's like, it was just a shadow. I'd see it out of the corner of my eye, turn around to look, and there wouldn't be anything there. But it started happening often enough that he was really starting to believe that there actually was something going on in the house. Mm. And then I had a cat that was just this beautiful little orange tabby we named Dusty. And at that point, she was probably about 5 or 6 years old. And, you know, cats will sometimes take off like bat out of heck for no reason. Like they'll just get a wild hair and go running through the house. So when she'd act crazy, we'd just be like, well, she's just being a cat. So there was one night that we were sitting in the formal living room, and we had one of those big old stereo systems that had like all the different components and the plexiglass on the front of it. And we were sitting there listening to records, and she came in from the kitchen and literally ran so hard into that plexiglass that she bounced off of it and was stunned for a second, and then she went running up the stairs. And Mom and I just looked at each other, because at that point, Dad had admitted that he was having those little shadow experiences. And we were like, I wonder what actually scared her, because she's never done anything like that before, and she never did anything like that again. And then she actually had some crazy stuff happen to her. So my parents' master bath was on the same side of the house as the bathroom that I was in. But the bathroom that I was in, I don't think had a window. Their master bath had a window. We would hear her crying. She was an indoor-outdoor cat. She didn't like to go out at that house because there were like a million squirrels. And I think they terrorized her. But we...
They ganged up on her.
Yeah, like they just throw acorns at her or something. I don't know. Right. Raleigh's called the city of oaks for a reason. There are acorn trees everywhere. But yeah, so we would be upstairs like talking, my mom and I, and we would hear her crying and knowing she was outside, but we'd hear her crying, follow the sound into my parents' bathroom. And she would be on the outside of the window, hanging onto the screen, and the window was shut. And there was no way she should have been there.
Oh, geez.
Like, she couldn't, you know, the cats aren't going to climb a brick wall. But then there was nothing hanging there where she could have climbed up and jumped over.
What in the world?
And that happened like 3 times.
Wow, that's different. I don't think I've heard anything like that before.
I haven't either. And part of the reason that I like collecting stories is because I want to hear somebody else had the same experiences.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, that's a different one. The poor cat was getting it pretty bad too.
Yeah, she didn't like that house either. Yeah, so another thing that happened was the hot water heater was kept in a shed outside the house. So it wasn't even attached to the house. I have no idea how that works. And as a 16-year-old, I didn't care. But it was in the shed, and the landlord kept it locked. So we did not have a key to the shed. I think she had the hot water heater was out there, and I think she had like the lawnmower because she'd come over and every other week and mow the lawn and that sort of thing. So I did not remember this. I don't know if I just had blocked it out of my mind or because I was a kid, it wasn't that important to me. But after I put a lot of these stories, not all of them, but a lot of these stories about the house in my book, and my mom read that chapter and she was like, "You forgot to talk about the hot water heater." And I said, "Mom, what are you talking about?" And she said that about four times over the course of the winter, something had literally turned the switch on the hot water heater to the off position. And they, every time the hot water went out, they had to call my landlord, and the landlord would come, unlock the shed, go in there, and the switch would be in the off position.
In the locked shed.
Yeah. And she was trying to say somebody broke in, but it was still locked when she got there.
Oopsie.
Eventually my parents, you know, after everybody in the family had had some, you know, not experiences quite like mine, but they'd heard things in the house when nobody else was there, and the littler things, the shadow out of the corner of your eyes, they finally asked the landlord, you know, "Have you ever had anybody say something is going on in the house?" And, you know, they kind of danced around the subject without saying the house is haunted. And the landlord, Dad said, looked at him and said, "You're crazy, and the people who lived there before you were crazy."
Oh, yes. You're like, yes, we're not alone.
Right. Yeah. And she's in denial if she thinks all of her tenants are crazy. So, yeah. So that place, living there for a year, by the time we left there, I was like, I can't live like this in another house. I need to understand what's going on. So that's when I started buying books. And I started with Hans Holzer. He's a good entry into ghost experiences. I bought every book I could find by him. And then I started spreading out from there.
Hans Holzer is, for me, also one of the first authors that I bought. It was Haunted America, and I still have that in hardcover somewhere in one of my boxes. There's still stuff boxed up here. But yes, Hans Holzer is amazing. Nicole, yeah. How much do you think that you being a younger female in this situation, because you did have two brothers, how much do you think that made you the target?
It could have helped, because whatever it was definitely a masculine energy, and maybe he hated women. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I didn't have enough control of those abilities back then. It was just, I didn't know how to turn it off. I didn't know how to interpret it. I did feel very much like it was masculine, and that was probably the first place I ever felt enough to be able to say masculine versus feminine. And then seeing the man's hand helped confirm that it was masculine.
Right.
But yeah, I think really what made me the target more than anything was the fact that I was so sensitive to everything.
Yeah. Do you wish, I mean, obviously you have other experiences and you've been investigating probably other haunted locations, probably best you don't live in them. Are you of the mind that you wish that you didn't have this at all?
Not anymore. Back then I would have been totally happy if that had been taken away from me, because I didn't understand that it was actually a gift. But now I feel like it's something that I can use to help other people. So now I'm happy about it. And I've, you know, in my 20s, I made friends with some psychics. One of them was literally a professional psychic. And then she had her little group of friends who are all trying to learn from her and hang out with her. And I became one of those people. And she helped me figure out how to put psychic walls up so that I could turn it off when I need to turn it off. And I wasn't constantly just walking around like almost like short circuiting, like everything was setting me off one way or another, either emotionally or physically, or I just overwhelmed, or so that helped a lot. And then once I started feeling like I could control that part of it, then I started trying to learn how to interpret what I was getting when I had my walls down. And then I fell in love with a guy and he wasn't interested in any of it at all. So I, late 20s, I got married and I set everything aside for a while. And that marriage didn't last very long, and thankfully, and that let me open back up and eventually start using it for investigating. And probably the biggest, two big reasons I investigate. One is curiosity, because I don't know if we're ever going to fully understand all of this, but I do want to understand better. And if I can get any sort of physical evidence to help others understand it, or to contribute to what scientific research is being done, that's awesome. But really my biggest reason is to help other people, because I don't think anybody should be afraid of living in their own house. And since I've been through it, I know how that feels.
How long did it take for you to learn how to put up walls, or to turn it off, or to turn it down?
It was probably a good 6 months of hanging out with my psychic friend almost every week. And just, she taught me how to meditate and do grounding meditations. And then once I learned how to kind of ground myself, that was like the first step. And then literally I visualized walls going up around me, because the visual aspect of it helps with the focus. And now I do it without even thinking. Like, I can just kind of turn it off and on when I need to. And most of the time it's off, because nobody wants to walk around like that all the time. It's right. Exhausting.
What if you have it completely off, the walls are down, and you go to a graveyard or a hospital or a nursing home or somewhere like that, and you just, the walls are down, speaking about that, you haven't chosen to put them up. I mean, do you get mostly feelings, like sad feelings? Do you ever hear voices? You know, what sorts of things do you experience at places like that?
I have kind of a funny story about a hospital. So about 2.5 years ago, my boyfriend was really, really sick. Like, they couldn't figure out what was wrong with him. He'd almost died twice, and he's been about 2.5 months in the hospital. And I was going to see him, and most of the time I would go in with my walls up, because I've always hated hospitals, which is ironic because my mom was a nurse for 45 years and worked in the big hospitals. And I wouldn't go visit her at work. She worked with babies, so she's in the most joyous part of the hospital, but it was just like overwhelming emotionally, like sadness and stress and anxiety just to get to that floor. So I wouldn't go see her unless I absolutely had to. So I just have always avoided hospitals. So then my boyfriend, 2.5 years ago, ends up in the hospital, and I'm going to see him as often as I can. And he was about an hour from here. And I went in one day and I was just trying to focus on him. He spent most of the time I was visiting sleeping. And I put my walls down because I was trying to figure out if there was something that he needed from me that I could do for him in that moment, like just, trying to be a good girlfriend without waking him up. So eventually it was time to leave, and I wasn't thinking, and I walked out of the room and down the hall toward the elevators, because he was on like the fifth floor or something like that. When I was heading toward the elevators, like coming out of the hallway, there's a big foyer and an open space, and the elevator was on the opposite side. There were like three people standing waiting for the elevator. And the elevator door opened up, and instead of walking in, they all walked away. They walked down a different hallway. And I thought that was kind of weird, but I'm like, well, maybe they changed their mind. So I get into the elevator by myself, And, you know, you walk in, you turn around to face the doors, you hit the button to the floor you want, and the doors close. And immediately I felt somebody standing behind me just looking at me intently. And I knew there was nobody physically standing behind me. And I was like, great. And I thought, okay, you're not welcome. I don't know who you are. I'm sorry you're here. And as the doors opened, I whispered, you're not allowed to follow me home. And I probably looked crazy talking to myself, but I, like, as soon as the doors opened, I booked it out of there and went straight toward the exit. Yeah, I got home and I was texting with him because he'd finally woken up, and I was like, you'll never believe what happened, because he's open enough that I can tell him stuff like this and he doesn't call me crazy. He's actually really supportive. Part of the reason I love him. But I was like, I had a little visitor on the elevator. I may not be coming back to the hospital for a couple of days.
Yeah, might need a break after that one, especially if you feel like you have to say out loud, you cannot follow me home.
Right. It was just, that's the kind of thing that'll happen if I don't have my wall up.
No wonder. You're like, let's get that wall right back up. Now, what about, I was on your website and I'm kind of going through, and we'll bring up your books and everything here before we go, but can you tell the story of the temper tantrum throwing spirit in the hotel room? That kind of caught my eye there.
Yeah, that was an Epicon. So they don't do this anymore, but it was a paranormal conference in Virginia Beach. And it was at the old Cavalier Hotel in early April. So at that time, that hotel, they had an old Cavalier Hotel up on the hill, and then down below, closer to the beach, is the new Cavalier Hotel. And the old Cavalier Hotel is just this really cool old place that, you know, in its heydays, I think in the like 20s and 30s, it was the party place. People from New York and DC would come down and party there. And one of the stories associated with the hotel, and one of the reasons that it's supposed to be haunted, is Adolf Coors died there. And he was staying in one of the upper floors, and he was found on the ground below the window. So there was one story that said he jumped to his death and he died. And the other story about that was, somehow he managed to close the window behind him as he was falling, which, you know, insinuates that somebody pushed him or something along those lines. So that's one of the reasons that the hotel is supposedly haunted. Epicon was a weekend long thing in early April, and we were the only ones, the people who attended were the only ones in the hotel. Like, it was shut to all other visitors. And so, you know, we had Rosemary Ellen Guiley and John Zaffis, and, you know, all these cool people were there to give talks. Like, Rosemary Ellen Guiley did a talk on shadow people, and John was doing the haunted collector thing at the time. And it was so cool. And then we had the opportunity to either go to the Fairy Plantation and investigate there, which my group did on a regular basis, or stay at the hotel and just kind of wander around and do little investigations there. So I chose to stay at the hotel, and there were so many things that happened there, but the thing that led up to the temper tantrum in the bedroom was, we went out to dinner and we were coming back, and George, who is the founder of my group, Inspire, which is National Society of Paranormal Investigation and Research, He's got a dry sense of humor, and he's a bit on the sarcastic side. So as we're walking up the steps, me and one of my cohorts was beside me, and he was behind us. And he said, I know why Adolf Coors killed himself. And I said, why? And he said, because his beer sucked. And as we're stepping across the threshold into the hotel, Tommy, who's the girl who's next to me, she looks at me and she's like, what did he say? And I said, Adolf Coors killed himself because his beer sucked. So I said it inside the hotel. He said it outside the hotel. That night, it was like, we all investigated within the hotel, but we did it separately. I had met some other friends while we were there, and I decided to kind of poke around with them. And I got back to the room first. And I laid down to go to sleep, and I wasn't going to wait up for them. I had no idea when they were coming back. So I'm by myself. I'm falling asleep. And the alarm clock on the bed, on the bedside table between the two beds, flipped on. And I heard something like, "Wake up, Miss Maroc." And that was it. And I sat up in bed straight up because I'm like, what the heck is that? And the only thing I could figure out that it came from was this alarm clock, because that's the direction it came from. And I was like, okay, that's weird. There's nobody around. So I go back to sleep. And eventually they come in. I didn't even hear them come in. Like, that's how dead to the world I was. I was in my bed, and it was two women. They shared the other bed. About 5 o'clock in the morning, there is this huge crash in the room, and my bed shook, and I sat up, and I'm looking at, my first thing to look at was the door of the closet. I don't know, since I was a kid, I've always had a thing about closet doors being shut, and the door to the closet was shut. So I don't know why that was my first reaction, but that was my reaction. I guess I didn't want a monster in the closet or something. And I scanned the room from the far left to right in front of my bed. And there had been a huge, heavy wooden cornice or balance or whatever you call it over the window directly across from my bed. And it wasn't there anymore. It was leaning against the bench that was at the foot of the bed. So it had been ripped off the wall and came about 5 feet across the floor and hit that bench. Like, it looked like it was aimed at my bed. And the other two woke up, and they were like, "Wow, that looks like it was aimed at you." And all I could think was, I'm not the one who said it.
Like, I was just repeating what he said.
Right. So don't tick off Adolf Coors here at the Old Cavalier Hotel.
PSA, everyone. Okay.
Oh my gosh. That was not the only crazy thing that happened while we were there, but that was the worst, the craziest. And the funny thing is, I got up, we moved it because it was a big, heavy, like 6-foot-long thing. And we moved it so it was out of the way. Tommy went to take a shower, and Carol got dressed and went downstairs and didn't come back up. And we're all three investigators. Like, that just freaked her out so bad she was done. Mm. And it was the day we were going to leave anyway. Tommy got a shower. I went back to sleep. I was like, if that's the worst you can do, I'm good.
That's awesome. You're like, you're not getting me out of my sleep time. Nope.
Yeah.
Well, for something that large to go that far and to, you know, end up at the foot of your bed, holy cow.
Right. So it was the window was directly across from my bed, and the way that we know that it didn't fall and bounce is Tommy's luggage was against the wall underneath the window and open, and it had not been touched.
So it had to clear that too. So, oh my gosh.
Yeah. So literally, it came off the wall and hit the bench at the foot of the bed. And the bench was only like a foot wide. It's just one of those things to sit on when you put on your shoes.
It's just a good thing it didn't end up in the bed with you. It could have hurt you.
Right. I truly believe that I am protected. And that since I learned how to put my walls up, I've basically said a prayer for protection every day of my life. So I think that helps.
Well, thanks for sharing that story. That one stuck out to me when I was reading the description of the book. Nicole, if you could, you know, because we all have these questions and we don't know if we're going to get the answers to them. Let's say that you could get the answers to some of the biggest questions that you have with these things that we look into and are interested in, but you'd have to either just move straight back into that same house or live in a similar situation. Maybe not quite as even dramatic, maybe just take it down a notch. Would you be willing to do that? Let's say another year or two, would you be willing to do that?
I don't know. I've never thought about it. honestly, now that I have learned how to clear houses, I probably wouldn't have to do that. But I don't think I would want to do it. I'm very happy living in a nice, quiet house.
Yeah.
I don't know if that really answers the question, though.
No. That's a very honest answer. And I like that. I like that because that's probably what I would say, too, because I have my no lists and everything. And I always say how important it is to get sleep. Human beings need sleep and peace and not being terrified in their own home. I've said that so many times, and I really do feel that way. So, no, that's an honest answer. So, have you heard any other whispers or known anyone that's lived in that childhood home of yours? And if it's still going on?
I don't. Yeah, I have no idea. I actually work with somebody who grew up down the street, and her parents still live in that neighborhood. And I told her which house it was, and she was like, I don't think I've ever known anybody that lived there. Mm. And I said, well, nobody lives there for very long, because apparently everybody wants to get out of there as soon as they get there.
Yeah, and you're like, and so, I know why.
Yeah, and, you know, part of me, especially when I was writing the book, and I was kind of reliving the, you know, as you're writing stuff, you kind of relive all the memories. I was like, part of me wants to like go knock on the door and be like, do you have any experiences you want to tell me about? But of course I'm not going to look like the crazy person knocking on random doors. So it's not going to happen.
Yeah. That's not an easy thing to do, even though we live it and breathe it every day in one way, shape or form. That's still a very difficult thing to do. I mentioned this earlier, but you do have and correct me if I'm wrong, you have two fiction and one nonfiction book out, correct?
Correct. Yeah. The first fiction book is a typical first book. Like, it's a fun, quick read, but it's not great. It's still out there because I've got family who wants to be able to access it when they need it. And that one's called The Perfect Circle. But that one was really cathartic because I took a lot of the stories that I've been told and some of my own experiences and wove it into the fictional storyline. And I kind of did the same thing with the Tritium Hypothesis, which is the second fiction book that I just wrote that a few years ago. And that one is about a UFO flap in Eastern Tennessee in a small town. And the main character is very much based on me. She's a meteorologist investigating with a paranormal group, and she gets flung into this alien thing, and she just doesn't know how to deal with it because aliens are a whole lot scarier than ghosts at this point. I have had my own UFO experience, and I put that in the book. So that's just kind of a way to almost anonymously, but not really anonymously, get some of my other stories out there.
And that's in the fictional work, in this fictional work that you're mentioning, your UFO experience.
Yeah, that was in the Tritium Hypothesis. And I actually just finished the rough draft of the sequel to that, but it's probably going to be a while before I edit it and flesh it out and get that published.
See, that's a good teaser, you guys, to pick up the first book. The second one's coming, and then you can read about her UFO experience, which is woven into the fictional work. I like that.
Yeah.
And she's a meteorologist, you said. Sorry to interrupt you. You said she's a meteorologist. That's awesome. That's great.
Yeah, I let her get the job because I don't practice meteorology anymore. Actually, I'm an SEO content writer now, and I love it because I get paid to write, which is my passion. But I love the meteorology too. It's just, unless you have a master's degree or a PhD in meteorology, you don't get a good job and you don't get good pay. And I don't have a face for TV, so I did that for about as long as I could handle it, and then I got burned out and got out of it.
Well, it seems like you're a lot happier now. And now, especially that you can put walls up and keep doing the, you know, these kinds of works and go and clear houses and do all these kinds of things. Yeah. So the nonfiction, which I already mentioned, guys, is called Please Don't Call Me Psychic: Stories from My Paranormal Life. And you spell her name NICOLLE, Nicole Morocq, MOROCK. That is on Amazon. But well, Nicole, before you go, of course, please let everybody know if I missed anything with the books, where else they can find them. And then, of course, the podcast, Peep Podcast. Tell us a little bit more about that. Like, what's coming up for that? You know, is it weekly? Where can everybody find that? Give them the scoop.
Yeah, it's every other Wednesday. And I just published an episode today, like this morning, and it is kind of, I should be better at this. So I guess the elevator pitch is, it is relating the scientific and academic research of the paranormal to people who have everyday type of paranormal experiences. So I talked to both researchers, and I've interviewed parapsychologists about telekinesis, like you said, researchers who are doing studies on near-death experiences, a guy who wrote a couple of books on lucid dreaming, and how if you can get good at lucid dreaming, you could actually improve your waking life by figuring out things. Like, some of it's psychology, some of it you can fix things that are physically wrong with you while you're dreaming. It's amazing. I also, like I said, talk to people who have everyday experiences. So I talk to anything from professional psychics and astrologers to people who just have experienced ghosts. One of my most popular episodes is called The Sergeant in the Haunted Jail. And I spoke with a woman who, we didn't say exactly where this jail is, but she worked at a county jail, still works there. She's taken some time off, I think, for family stuff. She has had some really intense experiences, both with the inmates being affected by something paranormal and actually having ghosts in the jail. And those, like, if you're going to listen to anything, that one would be a good starter to listen to that one first if you like the scary stuff.
And you can find Peep Podcast, I'm assuming, pretty much anywhere you find podcasts, right?
Right. On Apple, Spotify, iHeart, and all the other podcatchers. It's P-E-E-P Podcast. And you can also listen to it on the embedded player at peeppodcast.com, which is also my website, NicoleMaroc.com. So I've got both URLs pointing to the same spot. And that's where you can find out when I'm doing appearances and when the next book is coming out and all that good stuff.
Fantastic. And everybody, if you're looking for links for those things just mentioned by Nicole, head to IntoTheFrayRadio.com and click on her episode. I will put it all in the show notes. Nicole, it's been a pleasure finally speaking with you. So I really thank you for coming on finally. It's been long overdue.
I'm so thankful that you asked me. I really enjoyed it. And like everybody says, you make it really easy to tell the stories. And you're actually one of my heroes. I've been listening to you for a while now. And you're part of the reason that I also interview people about their experiences.
Oh, it just... Thank you. That really makes my day to hear that. I would inspire anybody. That means a lot. Thank you.
You're welcome. It's true. Well, being on your podcast means a lot to me because it's like, I feel like I achieved a goal and I didn't even know I had this goal.
Thank you.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such and such a college. I've done these things as my profession. I produce a little bark. Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is. Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes and consulting our memories. But then there's a real you, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? We shall see how they play with this exam by the koans to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are. that after your funeral, you know, you will suddenly become somebody different, living somewhere else. They will say reincarnation means this, that if you sitting here now are really convinced that you're the same person who walked in at the door half an hour ago, you'll be reincarnated. If you are liberated, you will understand that you're not. The past doesn't exist. The future doesn't exist. There is only the present. That's the only real you that there is. The Zen master Dogen put it in this way. He said, spring does not become the summer. First there is summer, and then there is spring.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin Marshall credit card bill.